healthy economic future for Alaska requires well-educated students. Most of us can agree on that. But what is required to provide a great education has been hotly debated at school board meetings, local and state government hearings, and around dinner tables across the state. Is raising the base student allocation the best path forward? Teacher bonuses? More funds for charter schools? We'll discuss supporting education, students, and teachers today on Talk of Alaska.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. If you're a parent with kids in local schools, you probably have a good idea of the challenges school officials face in trying to provide the best education for your children. Class sizes, staffing shortages, limited funds for needed supplies, teacher pay and benefits are just a few of the issues that create obstacles to productive learning for students and teachers. Some parents and the governor think more funds for public charter schools is a big part of the solution. Other parents and many teachers want to see traditional public schools garner more funding and staffing support to help students have success. So, what is the best path forward? Joining me to discuss student success are the current Commissioner of Education and former Anchorage School District Superintendent, Dr. Dina Bishop. Commissioner Bishop, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Also on the line today with us is Dr. Lisa Parody, Executive Director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators, and Felix Myers is a senior at Sitka High School and is the Senior Student Advisor for the State Board of Education. Welcome. Thank you all for being on hand today for this important discussion.
Thanks for having us. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you.
You can also join us, Alaskans. Do you have kids in school and have ideas about what your local district needs for student success? You can call us statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. So clearly, discussions about education generate a lot of passion in parents, students, and community members. Here are some voices from a KUAC report on a borough assembly hearing in Fairbanks last week on whether the tax cap should be raised to provide millions of dollars more in education support.
Every time we have a budget shortfall, everyone goes, "Oh no, the teachers! We can't leave our children behind." And I absolutely agree with that. We should not be leaving our children behind. But the reason that's happening is because they are the last budget item.
You have failed the community in providing reading, math, and arithmetic to our children. You've taken God out, and instead you'd rather teach our children about sex. Shame on you.
So I just want to say to all the educators listening that I see you, you're appreciated, and I'm grateful every day that I get to send my kids to school and know that they are safe, in good hands, and are getting a good education while also learning to be a member of society.
That was Jennifer Hughes, Ella Cotter, and Jan Gunderson speaking. This is a good snapshot of how much Alaskans care about education and how divergent their ideas can be for how to best support it. Alaska House Republicans didn't get enough votes yesterday to advance their education bill to the House floor. They may try again today. The bill includes a $300 increase to the base student allocation. It would also ease the approval process for charter schools, would give teachers bonuses up to $15,000, and bolster internet speeds across the state. Commissioner Bishop, start us off here. Do you support the House education bill as it currently is?
Sure. So SB 140 is moving in the right direction. So I do have my support behind it in that it looks to increase funding for education. And it really looks to answer some of those prior asks that we've had through different entities. So in prior to 2020, there was a request really by Dr. Parody's group as well as NEA to really look at the teacher recruitment and retention, because that was a major expense in our state. ICER also did a report on it about the cost of turnover. And I don't think education is the only sector dealing with that. Understanding how to keep our employees here in Alaska and our workforce healthy and happy is key. And part of that work was called the Teacher Retention and Recruitment Task Force, if you will. Hundreds of educators, lots of other stakeholders involved, and some of the answers, if you will, and the suggestions that came out of that were vast, and they're being worked on now. One is alternate pathways for certification, support for that, especially paraprofessionals. But the number one ask that came back from educators themselves was a type of payment for retention and recruitment, and that is in one of the bills, the governor's bill, to be able to attract and retain. So this came as the number one ask, and so it's in that bill to be able to really address the classroom. So with the increase in the BSA addressing the classroom, and then additionally, just allowing for additional pathways for charter schools. I know in the intro it said more money for charter schools. I don't necessarily, the funding formula really funds schools in the same manner, no matter what kind of school they are. The exception to that is correspondence schools. They're definitely treated differently in the funding formula, but it just allows a pathway, and the charter school laws have been in the state for 30 years. There's 30 charter schools. I don't think that this is the having additional pathways is going to impact the larger sense of public education.
So, excuse me, I misspoke. I should have said that it would allow for, would it be better to state it as an easing of requirements to create more charter schools, perhaps?
Nope, it's not easing of requirements either. Actually, Alaska has some pretty tough requirements in statute to start a charter school. What it does is provide another avenue. So you could have a local avenue through your local school board, or you could go to the state school board. So two different avenues to look to be chartered, but it's the same application and the same processes.
All right. Well, before we get some thoughts from our other guests, Dr. Lisa Paradis and Felix Myers, we are going to take a short break because we're having some technical issues and Dr. Bishop can't hear anything. So we need to clear that up and we'll be back as soon as we get the headphone situation resolved. Well, pardon the interruption there. We had some technical problems and we're hoping that we can keep moving forward now with our discussion today on Talk of Alaska about the future of education funding in the state. Our guests today are Dr. Dina Bishop, the Commissioner of the Department of Education and Early Development. Dr. Lisa Paradis is the Executive Director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators. And Felix Myers is a Sitka High School senior. And Felix is also the Senior Student Advisor for the State Board of Education. We had just been talking with Dr. Bishop about the education bill that went to the House floor, but it didn't advance. That bill includes a $300 increase to the base student allocation. It would ease the approval process for charter schools and would give teachers bonuses of up to $15,000 and bolster internet speeds across the state. We heard from Commissioner Bishop about her thoughts about this bill. So, Dr. Paradis, Lisa, I want to turn to you now. What do you want to see lawmakers do and have the governor agree to?
Thank you, Lori. You know, I think for us, we're very focused on increasing the base student allocation. You know, student achievement is absolutely our number one priority, but it is sustainable funding that remains our most critical need. And I appreciate that Commissioner Bishop brought up the governor's task force on recruitment and retention, because the number one item from that study was adequate compensation for assigned duties. And the second item was retirement benefits. And I think you're probably familiar with our famous pencil charts that we create every year using legislative finance office data that they provide us. And in essence, since 2017, only a $30 increase to the BSA. And when you adjust for inflation, the FY24 BSA of $5,960, it has an FY12 value of $4,682. And I think we've really stressed to the legislature that the loss of buying power for school districts due to that almost a decade of flat funding is really hurting districts. The funding outside the formula is unknown until the end of the session. Most districts have already set their budgets that they're required to do. They've made cuts, they've pink slipped teachers. So if the BSA had been adjusted for inflation since 2017, it would be a value of $7,373. And you've been hearing that 14-13 number advocated for by teachers and school districts and parents and families. And that came from that inflation number. And I'll just say that that's probably our biggest push, but I want to go back to the retirement benefits also and the governor's proposal for lump sum payments. There's a bill moving in the legislature, Senate Bill 88, for its defined benefit proposal. And I've taken a look at an independent analysis of that bill. And in essence, it demonstrates that it is a much less costly proposal than the governor's teachers' bonus plan, and it will provide more reliable benefits and increase retention, better recruitment, improve productivity, and spillover benefits to the Alaska economy. So we are with the governor and the commissioner recognizing that there does need to be additional investment in education. We just see that benefiting our education districts, teachers, all of our support staff, everyone engaged in our communities around education being better benefited by an actual increase inside the base student allocation and a defined benefit program. And, you know, there's a host of other very important things in that bill. The broadband assistance grant being raised to 100 meg so that we can extend connectivity to our most rural and remote areas is a very high priority. You know, that's a basic equity issue for our students. Mm-hmm. There's transportation funds. And then I'll quick, because I know you want to talk to other folks, but I think it's worth noting that there's an allocation for transportation funds, and our transportation funds haven't been increased since, I think, 2016. Although the costs have increased about 40%. So there's a lot of really important things in the bill, but there's also some things that I think are concerning. And so I appreciate the legislature's discernment about this bill and really looking at how do we make it move forward in the best way possible to best support our students.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and we're discussing the future of education in the state and what the best path forward should be for supporting students, teachers, schools, and communities for the best education in Alaska. In the station today is Dr. Dina Bishop, who is the Commissioner of the Department of Education and Early Development. Also on the phone is Lisa Parody. Dr. Parody is the Executive Director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators. And Felix Myers is a Sitka High School senior and is also the Senior Student Advisor for the State Board of Education. Do you have kids in school and ideas about what your local district needs for student success? You can call us statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Felix, your thoughts, give us the student perspective on what you see as needed for the future, especially in light of this vote that, you know, left this bill in limbo after it was a split vote in the House yesterday.
So this is something that I have been following very closely. It was my legislator who actually broke the vote in the favor of not voting for it. And in talking with her and sort of talking with, you know, other students last week in Juneau, what has really been sort of stressed, especially among students in rural districts, is that this lack of funding issue is an emergency. And a $300 BSA increase is not significant enough to address this problem. And additionally, what's important to remember about that is that our outside the cap funding increase from last year, just for the 1 year, was $340. So if this bill had passed at its current state, we'd actually be seeing a $40 decrease per student in our funding per for our schools. And that simply cannot happen this year. I mean, I was talking to students, you know, from Norvik, and they were telling me about their transportation needs and how they no longer are able to take planes to their basketball games. They actually have to take snowmobiles across the ice and across the, you know, the tundra to get to their games. And that to me is, you know, both a safety issue, but also one of showing the lengths and the extremes that districts are going through right now. I was talking to a student from Kotzebue last week, and she was telling me about how the heaters broke down in their school and kids are keeping blankets in their lockers because of how cold the school is. And they've actually had to close down the school several times and keep kids home because it's just not safe conditions. And, you know, that's what, you know, students are facing. That directly affects their ability to go to school, get that education that they need, and students are struggling from that. The other perspective that I think is really important to mention is the mental health aspect. And that's something that I've been hearing a lot from students across the state. Students, especially in rural districts, do not have the same access to counselors, to mental health professionals, and those networks of support. I was talking to some students from, you know, Prince of Wales Island, which is a very rural district here in Southeast Alaska. And they were telling me about how they don't have, you know, a counselor to go to. They don't really have any of these support systems because their schools are so far apart and they just don't have the resources. They're down to, you know, one teacher for, you know, all of middle school and high school, and the needs of those students are not being adequately met. Mm. And that also goes into the teacher aspect, because some of those students were telling me about the teacher housing issues and how that housing is not adequate for teachers. And that's why we sort of are seeing this revolving door in these schools. That's the words that they've been telling me, is that there's this sort of revolving door in these schools. Teachers come in and then they leave. And sometimes they don't stay for a full year. A lot of teachers don't even actually end up coming because of the housing issues. And, you know, that's really indicative of a system that has not been, the needs of a system that have not been adequately met over the last, you know, 20 years. Both my parents are teachers. And when we originally came to Alaska, we came with the promise of that defined benefit. We came because of the competitive package that Alaska offered. But unfortunately, we came in August of 2006, just 2 months after Tier 3 started. And so because of that, my family had to leave for 10 years, and we only came back due to a COVID emergency. Mm. And my parents are going to leave again the moment my little brother graduates. So, you know, what that really shows is this system is not competitive. But also what I think is really important is that the students know. The students understand the issues that they're facing. They are advocating for a higher BSA increase. I actually just looked in my school's newspaper that our journalism class runs, and there was an article in there that was published just last month about the BSA that a student wrote, and about how important it was for the future of our school district, but also schools across Alaska, that we get that 1413 number. And so what we see is that the districts are struggling, and the students know, and what they want is to feel that their programs, their CTE programs, their reading is important enough to be funded to the level that they deserve for those programs, and for that, and for their teachers to be able to actually, you know, live and continue to stay in those schools in an environment that works for them. And it is a safe environment as well.
All right. Thank you, Felix, for the student perspective. We had an email from Lupita who says, is advocating for raising the BSA, the base student allocation, saying in the time since 2017, inflation has risen by 28%. And Lupita says, our students and schools are suffering as flat funding and inflation contribute to growing class sizes, lost opportunities, and increased educator turnover. She writes, the governor's proposal does not solve the problem. Teachers don't want a bonus without job security or a pension. Commissioner Bishop, I'm hoping that you can join us now. And when you were the superintendent for the Anchorage School District, you did advocate for increasing the base student allocation. Now you've said that people are too focused on that and it's not a magic fix. What do you think the right mix is?
That's a great question, and I'll start with just sharing a little bit about my disposition and really in speaking and just listening, you know, just to some of the inputs about the discussion. And, you know, I think the crux of what the understanding is that really we want education, you know, to improve, and we want our students to be able to compete in the world that they're entering. You know, this century with so many opportunities, the world is flat, and just the skills and what they need to know and be able to do is so significant. And time and time again in my experience, we have come to the table and just said the BSA, the BSA, and we don't always tell the whole story. And it occurred to me, no matter how I think and just the world being divided, somebody else is going to have a really great argument. So sitting down with folks and understanding the need to not only just provide money without feeling as though we're getting better as a state, and then understanding, of course, we need to fund education. And so I really looked at this and thought, why don't we have the conversations about where we want to see the improvements and make the needed investment. What was shared, and I love student advocacies, you know, we shared about the heating in a building, and that's a capital need. And that is not through our statutory requirements and funding. Capital needs are handled absolutely separately than operational needs, which we talk about the base student allocation.
Right.
And so, you know, that's a, while I appreciate that, that isn't the crux of what, you know, Felix shared at the end, reading, CTE, those are those student inputs and what we want for our students. Same thing with transportation. It's a separate, you know, when we can't get to our basketball games, that's a separate account and a separate accounting.
Absolutely.
Of funds.
But let's talk about the BSA.
Sure.
And, you know, I saw notes in one story, a parent saying, you know, that advocating for raising the BSA, saying I wouldn't tell my child to keep making a better rainbow with white and brown pencils before giving him new pencils. And so he was saying, you know, you can't expect better outcomes if we don't increase the
sure.
funding.
So I was just giving a grounding of understanding how complex it is when we talk about inputs when they really aren't ubiquitous. You know, they're just different inputs in the state. But getting to the BSA, I just want to share, as a superintendent of Anchorage School District, I have never seen as much money in public education as I had the last 3 years. And we can talk about the BSA as you'd like and as you've asked me to, but there has been money invested in public education. There has been. So much that you know, the state actually created a waiver that districts could keep over a 10% fund balance, which was absolutely needed. And many districts at the time of the influx of COVID monies, if you will, we couldn't spend it enough because we couldn't get the workforce needed, you know, for the very reasons that Felix shared, you know, housing in rural Alaska and just some of the conditions. And even in larger urban areas, just the workforce, attracting and keeping a workforce is difficult. And understanding that it hasn't been without the funding needed. And so I just always want to go back to the truth about looking at what money we were spending at the time. We were still spending, even if it's outside of the BSA, it still spends the same. What Dr. Parody said is the real issue is that it's very difficult to plan when the money comes session to session. Mm. And so I was delighted this session that
education got out early. It was not left to the very last few days of the session, because that is problematic for school districts, because contracts are due and you do start planning for your next year. But rather, we started at the beginning to be able to solve something, to be able to have a plan forward. And so I do believe there is a level of BSA that should be funded. But if you look at the formula, and I'm a math teacher, the BSA is a single number. And the value of the BSA comes through those inputs that we believe should be funded. The funding formula has a cost area differential. Our legislators believe in that. It has a school size factor. It has a student needs factor. So these factors increase the BSA for the types of education that we want our children to have. I don't argue for less money in education. I am arguing that if we want to get it right and we want to be sure that we take the left and the right and listen to everyone who says we do need to invest in public education, but we need to be sure that our investments are targeted and get those outcomes that we want.
Okay, we need to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion about the future of education funding as Talk of Alaska continues. Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. If you're just joining us, we're talking about education funding as the legislature grapples with trying to come up with a package that lawmakers can agree to. Our numbers statewide are 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're at Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Let's go to the phones for just a moment. Lakota is in Glen Allen. Hello. All right, Lakota is not in Glen Allen. Well, probably is, but got tired of waiting, apparently. So let's go to Diane in Anchorage. Hello.
Hi. I listened to all 7 hours of the House Rules Committee hearing, and 99% of the people who spoke of increase and for the BSA. If you only increase it like is in the current bill, $300, it does nothing to reduce class sizes. It doesn't help with the extra needed services that the 91 or more different dialects, non-English dialects that are spoken by the students at their home. And I also read the two reports that Dr. Bishop cited when she spoke before the Rules Committee. And one of them actually said on page 92, and I wrote a letter to the editor on this, that you need to increase by $1,400 the BSA. And there are things that a bonus for teachers does not reduce their class size. It doesn't help them get the needed support staff. It is absolutely crucial, and we need a clean bill that says, Senate Bill 140 is about internet access, and that's a no-brainer, obviously. We need another bill that clearly says, raise the BSA, keep it inflation-proofed. Of course, we need to have a good retirement system, all those other things. I am not convinced that homeschools need additional funding. I have not seen the data.
Okay.
But I just wish ever. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Diane. And I want to clarify, charter schools are still, they are public schools, and that's different than homeschooling. So let's get some thoughts. Lisa, how about we hear from you, Dr. Parody, your thoughts about Diane's comments about how to clarify what should be in these bills.
Thank you, Diane, for your comments. And I do think that you're probably on the right track, that we need to look at how we inflation-proof the BSA going forward, get us caught up. One of the things that Commissioner Bishop said that I agree with, we all want our students to improve. And I think fundamentally they will improve if we do what you said, which is to make them whole. Let's get our budgets caught up. You know, 1413 is not innovation. That's just getting us to a point where we can start to address you know, school safety and preparing, attracting, and retaining our qualified educators, and, you know, the basic things we need to do to stabilize school districts. So I think let's do increase the BSA. Let's address the ongoing inflation. All of us in our own lives understand inflation through health insurance. And, you know, school districts are they're often the largest business in most of the communities, and they have the same kind of pressures that we're seeing in our own lives in terms of inflationary costs. So it makes sense to inflation-proof the BSA going forward, and maybe kind of reconstructing some of the component pieces in SB 140 to really meet the needs of districts. And I did want to quickly, if I can, comment on two things that Felix said. You know, this piece around access to our professionals, you know, in terms of recruiting and retaining counselors, school social workers, nurses, all the kinds of mental health professionals. We do not have enough in Alaska. Students don't have access, staff don't have access. And that, Commissioner Bishop and I talk about targeted funding a lot and how to make a difference. And that's certainly an area that would make a difference for our students. And another one is investment in reading. As Commissioner Bishop said, we passed the Reads Act, but it has again ended as an unfunded mandate. And we need, you know, it was passed on the promise that we'd have pre-K dollars to support our students to avail themselves of pre-K, and yet only one school district was able to use those dollars. So I feel like there's work to be done there. I think targeted investment in an area that we all can agree is the most important thing for students. But at this point, what we've done is just further handicapped districts because they are trying to stretch, you know, doing less with less, really. I mean, there's just not enough money. So we do want to target some investment there. And I think that line of thinking, maybe through another bill is important. And I'll just close too by saying Felix nailed it in terms of deferred maintenance. Our average building in Alaska is 42 years old. I think we have 71 buildings that are over 60 years old. And our current backlog is $300 million and growing. So if you look at all these problems that have emerged because we have been starving public education, if we start to address those, we're going to see districts stabilize. We're going to see education where we all want to see it, which is best supporting our needs of our students and not having to impact the classroom because we have not had enough money poured into the system to address all these other pieces that are increasing by no fault of the district.
So Lisa, I want to I want to follow up here with you. Critics of increased funding for schools often say if there's more funding, the bureaucracy grows, administration swells, rather than money actually directly helping classrooms. How do you respond to that? What do you see across the state for administrative staffing? Do you see that there's bloat anywhere?
Actually, I don't. In fact, I think administrators are wearing more hats than they've ever worn across the state. All you have to do is go into a school and talk to the principal who's subbing every day, talk to the principal who is also filling in for, you know, the custodian who they couldn't keep on staff for, you know, or find someone. I mean, it is so... it's a narrative that gets exploited, but it's not true. I recently worked with our large five districts in the state and asked them, what are your administrative costs? And they are well below the average, national average. The total state is at 2%. And I think Anchorage is like at like 1.something%. I mean, so it's a narrative that's used, but it's false. And so I'm happy to talk to anyone about this idea that we're administratively bloated, because we absolutely are not.
And one more quick follow-up. There have been criticisms about districts who have fund balances in the bank. Why do they have these balances, and what is that funding for?
Well, it's a really important question, and one that we're going to be tackling here. A fund balance essentially is an accounting term that means the total accumulation of operating surpluses and deficits. It's not synonymous with unrestricted cash. And I think some people misunderstand that. Fund balances for school districts have several categories, non-spendable. They can't be spent because they're in a non-spendable form. You've got restricted, which is usually like pursuant to a grant restriction of some sort.
I see.
You've got committed, you've got assigned. The whole point is that when you say fund balance, you're talking about funds that are generally obligated. And I think what's important for us is unassigned is deferred revenue. But when you look at a report, for example, from the state, it looks like districts are flush. Most districts are not at all, or are well within the general accounting practices guidelines, which is recommending like 10%. And many are in deficit, I hate to say, but that is the real look at fund balance. And I know the commissioner and the governor's budget director and several school districts are going to be talking about this with Senate Finance to square up the realities against reporting, which may be, if you're not familiar with how to read a report, misleading.
All right, let's go to the phones for just a moment. Thank you for that, Dr. Parody. Let's go to Les Guerra is on the line from Anchorage, former state lawmaker Les Guerra. Hello.
Thank you, Laurie. So Felix and Dr. Parody have it right, but I just wanted to share, when I traveled the state 2 years ago, every superintendent I spoke to said exactly what Dr. Parody and what Felix said. And what Dr. Bishop said about this flood of money that came in, the one-time money, that's the problem. That's been the problem for 20 years. When you get one-time money, you can't put it into salaries because you can't cut somebody's salary next year when the money disappears. And you can't hire teachers because you can't fire them the next year when the money's not there. That's the one-time money, this flood of one-time money that Dr. Bishop talked about. It's gone. And so we are hundreds of millions of dollars behind inflation in school funding right now. You know, back in 2007, when I saw this brewing, I said we should just increase school funding and transportation funding. They're two separate statutes annually for inflation. So we don't talk about how many teachers we're going to fire. So let me just give you a couple of districts that have disparate problems. In Nome, they can't afford housing. You get a teacher for 1 year and they leave. That's bad for the students in Nome. Same in Dillingham. In Anchorage, parents are talking about leaving the state. This has become an out-migration state. When parents don't see good schools, they think about leaving the state to protect their kids. And finally, just what business people tell me is they look at school funding when they decide whether to locate up to Alaska. And businesses, the first question they ask is, what is school funding like and what are schools like in Alaska? And that's why we have not seen businesses relocate up here. So Dr. Parody and Felix are 100% right.
All right.
Thanks, Larry.
Thanks for the call. Commissioner Bishop, let's go back to you. Reflect on what you've just been hearing from both Dr. Parody and from our callers, and talk about what you think is the best path forward, especially when we talk about trying to stabilize staffing so that teachers stay in place. That takes a lot more than I know the governor has advocated for pay bonuses. Do you really think that will create longevity? It's not a plan to pay a yearly bonus, is it?
Actually, it's a pilot program to really respond to what teachers themselves in this working group from the National Education Association had said would make an impact. And so we wanted to look at that first, because when you talk about teachers, even though there's lots of people, it really takes a community, as an administrator myself, to run a school and to have a well-operated school. It's from parents to, you know, your paraprofessionals to your teachers and the support staff as well in the nursing and counselors, things like that. So, but it was answering the number one thing. How do you get closest to the classroom in an employee? That would be the teacher. That's where the value is added in public education, is that relationship and that magic that happens between the teacher and the student in the classrooms. And so that was an answer to that. It is a 3-year pilot to see if what the teacher said would actually come to fruition, that we would have more retention. And I think to the caller, Representative Guerra, I really do get, as an administrator, superintendent in two different districts that were operated very differently, but they were the two largest in the state. So I have some, pretty good backing behind me that all during those years, although we didn't like necessarily, it's a struggle to plan when the money comes outside the BSA because it's not guaranteed. I still had collective bargaining contracts approved. I still hired teachers. It wasn't as dire as he stated. Is there a better system that is more predictable? Absolutely. But again, when I want to listen to I go back and say, now, why haven't we? What is the argument on the other side about why we aren't being able to, as public education, just to grow and thrive? And it's just that question again about those outcomes. And so that's why I had suggested, why don't we then have a determination and a say in really the inputs? Because when you take the multipliers and put them through the formula, it's the same pot of money in the end. Mm. But it's just a statement that says, you know what, we believe in career and technical education, as Felix shared. We want students to have, career and tech. We want them to have AP courses. We want them to have these opportunities. So make sure that when you provide the money, you're making that statement. Again, reading was mentioned. Although I don't think reading can ever be considered an unfunded mandate, there are some things in that bill that require additional inputs. And so I do believe that, the initial input of $30, I think I would like to see additional funds targeted to ensure that kids can read. As you know, Alaska does struggle with that, that accountability for students reading on grade level by third grade. It was a bipartisan bill. Senator Begich and the governor put this through. I think it's one of the most significant bills in my 34-year history in public education. But I would just say, look at the data behind school districts. Collective bargaining agreements have been approved. Teachers have been hired, and teachers have been given raises over time. And so outside the formula is troublesome because it's just hard. It's hard to do year to year. I mean, think about homes. But it has been there. But I would like to get to a place that we talk about public education with pride and investment as well as outcomes.
All right. Let's go back to the phones for a moment. Peter is in Fairbanks. Hello, Peter.
Yes. Hello, Lori. I really enjoy your show. I wanted to comment on one of your initial statements. You talked about the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly meeting, and you gave three citizens' comments, which were correct. But what you neglected to say was the majority of the citizens that testified before the assembly were against giving $10 million going around the tax cap to the school district.
Okay.
And so I think that was an important point that was neglected. But I want to continue. I've been in Alaska 47 years. I was a teacher. I went to UAF, University of Alaska Fairbanks, and received my degree there. I taught many years in the state. And I also was a parent of five children who attended Fairbanks North Star Borough Schools. I do think we have a good school system. I do support the schools, but I want to make an important point, and that is many people today feel that the more money we spend on education equals a better educated student, and that is not correct. In my own case, I said I had five children. I had limited resources, but my children were received many awards. My two sons were state champions in wrestling. My daughter was selected as one of the Millennium Dreamers to attend Disneyland.
So they fared well in Fairbanks schools.
Yes, and so, but I want to just make the point that, which I earlier did, that more money does not equal a better educated student. And I think that's an important point.
All right. Thank you, Peter, for your thoughts on that. We only have a few minutes left in the program, and I want to get back to our guests here. Felix, You're a senior this year. What are your plans after high school? Do you plan to go to college? And if so, are you planning to go here or outside of Alaska? And what do you think you'll be doing for your working career?
So I already committed to Yale University for the next 4 years. I'll be majoring in ethics, politics, and economics. And then after that, I plan on either getting a law degree or getting a master's in international relations And so my problem is that I would love to come back to Alaska. Alaska has my heart. It's where I started my life and where I am now. Going from Utqiagvik and Sitka, I would love to come back here and continue to be an advocate to maybe join the legislature. But I also realize that it might not be the best place for my future family. And I've heard this from a lot of other students that they don't know if they want to raise their kids here because they're not sure that Alaska is the right place to raise a family anymore. You know, when they look at, you know, how during my lifetime, sort of how the funding has been flattened and how our education has not really been the priority, especially it doesn't feel like it's been the priority when it comes to the actual money. And, people look at that and say, I don't want to raise my kids here. And so for me personally, that means opening doors to, you know, going and working internationally in embassies, because I also lived internationally for 10 years, and that is a pathway that I'm interested in. But you know, it breaks my heart a little that I can't really look at Alaska as the most viable option because because I don't know where my family's going to be. I don't know where that support is going to be, and so and. You know, I was just talking to a student, you know, last week from Kenai, and he wants to be a teacher and he would love to come back to Alaska and teach, but he doesn't know if that's going to be available. He wants to be able to retire. He wants to have, you know, the ability to educate kids, but Alaska might not be the right place for that because of, you know, everything that's happened. And I think about my future and the future of other students. And that's really what I see.
So, Lisa, I want to get back to you here in our final couple of minutes. I know that you had talked in an earlier interview about the number of vacancies for teachers and other positions, and I believe it was one school district had one application from somebody within the state, but more than 60 from teachers in the Philippines. We had by email, Christy in Fairbanks says, many of our current educators are nearing eligibility for retirement. How do we make the teaching profession in Alaska more sustainable to keep those educators in the profession? What are your thoughts, Lisa, in a minute or so here about both teachers coming from outside of the US and how to incentivize keeping teachers in place that are already here?
Thank you. This is an important issue. That scenario was accurate, and I think it was surprising to that policymaker. You know, at the first day of this year, the Department of Ed shared that there were over 500 vacancies on the first day, and we had over 400 emergency certificates. And as you said, we are reaching out to foreign teachers to fill our vacancies. And I feel, you know, while that is a viable option, you know, we need to be looking at absolutely equipping districts with the resources to provide a nationally competitive compensation, a benefits package, combined with a robust state retirement system in order to correct this issue. We want Felix to come back to Alaska. We want the other student he talked about. I have four children. I would love them to be in Alaska. But until we get this righted around where we are supporting the best instruction, retaining the best teachers and other educators in our state, we're going to keep fighting this uphill battle. So I'll close, but I do think we are very heavily reliant at this point on foreign teachers, and I'm not sure that that's the trajectory that we want for our students. And so appreciate the opportunity to share some thoughts about that. Appreciate Dr. Bishop. She has a lot of experience We see things similarly in many ways and see things differently. But I know that we all, everyone on this call, has the best interests of students at heart. And if we can keep our eye on that and actually start chipping away at these issues that we know exist, I think we can make a difference. And I'm really counting on our legislature, who have heard from the public, who support public education, to make it happen this year. So thank you so much, Lori.
Yeah, thank you for being available. And Dr. Bishop, in our final minute here, it seems as if there's been a lot of support from the public for this increase in the base student allocation. Would you say that you're hearing the majority of comments from Alaskans who support raising it?
Sure. I think that really when we get back, you know, down to the detail of it, just even in this discussion, we're talking about the types of things that we want in public education and the idea that just raising the money might not get to the things that we want. And so I strongly stand behind investment in public education, but let's talk about the types of experiences that we want in our schools, the types of schools we want, whether it's the teacher recruitment and retention and the housing. How do we do those things to attract and retain? Because certainly, you know, the comment was money poured into the system without really a plan and a strategic way forward about how do we provide for the young people of Alaska to thrive. If we don't have a plan for that and really structure our investment in public education to support students and teachers, I think we'll be back here year after year like we've always had.
All right. Thank you so much to our guest today, Dr. Dina Bishop, the Commissioner of the Department of Education and Early Development. Dr. Lisa Parody is the Executive Director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators. And Felix Myers joined us from, he is a Sitka High School senior and is also the senior advisor representative for the State Board of Education. Thanks to our engineer, Chris Hyde, our producer, Madeline Rose, and on the phones, Wesley Early, and production intern Lou Ramirez Discerns helped us out today. We'll be back next week. I'm Lori Townsend. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.